Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On today's show, it's the Copyright Forum. To answer your questions, we have a great panel, our usual panel. Paul Rapp specializes in intellectual property law, including copyright, trademark, internet, art, and entertainment matters. He's also an adjunct professor of copyright and art and entertainment law at the Albany Law School, and his back is all better. Everything's good. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio, maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. You can give us a call right now, 800-348-2551. Again, that's 800-348-2551. Now, there are many ways you can contact us other than calling, although I'd like you to call. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. You know, or you could just call.
Smoke signals.
You could semaphore is also acceptable.
But we're out of time now.
That's the end of the show. Drive safely, everyone. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Nice to have everybody back. It's been a while, and you know, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. This was a great article. We had it on our website, and it goes back to a New York Times article about this woman who's doing a film. She wanted to put happy birthday to you in it. She would have had to pay $1,500, enter a licensing agreement. Who knew that this was still under copyright? We'll throw it to you, Paul, to start this up.
Warner Chappell, the huge publishing company, claims to own the copyrights to Happy Birthday. And they make, I think, several million dollars a year licensing it. And, you know, there was a law review article or some kind of scholarly article that came out 3 or 4 years ago that appeared to prove conclusively that this was a song that was a folk song that was adopted by a couple of sisters in the 1880s or something like that, and eventually made it its way, you know, into... And then somebody in 1928 or something registered the copyright for it. And that wasn't unusual for people to register songs that were, they really probably shouldn't have registered. But nobody has disqualified this, probably because the royalties that they get on a per use basis are probably so low that it pays to just pay for the royalty and not challenge it. But now a filmmaker is taking it to court to try to disqualify the copyright for Happy Birthday and God Bless Her.
Well, that also harks back to the current thing that's happening with the Sherlock Holmes Conan Doyle estate, where someone wants to write a derivative work about Sherlock Holmes, and they're challenging the Conan Doyle estate's grip on the character because it should, you know, it's been around. It's old enough to drive and drink on its own. It should be able to, you know.
And, you know, and a lot of that comes down to the whole argument that copyright lasts for, you know, the life of the artist plus, or the creator plus 70 years, which is a long time, you know, and does it need to, in all cases, last that long? And that's something that Congress is supposedly going to look at, is whether or not, you know, whether or not the duration of copyright protection is warranted and does what it's supposed to do.
But in the case of Happy Birthday to You, and on our website, not necessarily referenced to the New York Times, but in our website, they brought the song Good Morning to All, which is what it started as, Good Morning to All, and then they showed a primer for a teacher and said, well, if somebody in your class is, and this is from 1911, mind you, well before it was copyrighted, you know, if someone in your class is having a birthday, then you could sing Happy Birthday to You, Happy Birthday to You. In print, this was. So, I mean, it's clear that this was well established long before Warner Chappell got its grips on it. So my question for you is, if this is proven to be a non-legitimate claim, does Warner Chappell have to refund all the money?
It's an interesting question. Probably not, because they had a valid, you know, registration at the time before the Copyright Office, and they were acting on that, you know, and to to figure otherwise would mean you'd have to have a duty to have to investigate whether you should be invalidating all your copyrights, you know, and just because they had it and they probably acquired it from somebody else, from somebody, you know, this thing probably changed hands a dozen times since 1928 or whenever it was. So,
all right. Bill Westwood is our guest, Paul Rapp and Polly Law. It's the Copyright Forum. Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Brad in Fonda, you're first.
Hey.
Hello, Brad.
Wow. Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Okay. I'm a musician, Ray Graff. I want to say Ray Graff, fantastic radio guy, and it's a pleasure to listen to you and WAMC in general and all of the fine people there.
Thank you.
And okay, well, it's my pleasure, and I wanted to say that I'm a musician, and I don't have a music recording studio, but there are programs out there like Fruity Loops, which is one that I'm semi-familiar with. There are others, I'm sure, but Fruity Loops has the advantage of making beats like a drummer. I'm a guitarist and a singer, so I would need a drummer and a bass player. So what I would do is I would take the Fruity Loops program and make the drum beat and the bass line, and then add, and I could do all kinds of things on top of that. But then when I make a record with that, then what do I? Then how am I to handle the copyright after that? Does Fruity Loops, do they get a cut of the album that I make because that they because I've used their program? Hmm.
Is there a user agreement?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure in Fruity Loops or in GarageBand or any of those others, and I have seen the GarageBand license, which is you can use all this stuff royalty free. You can just go ahead and use it and add to it. So, you know, if you write a song and use as bed music stuff that you grabbed off of this software, you know, you can certainly register the melody, you know, and the lyrics, you know, and your arrangement and everything else. And you can also register your performance of that song. I mean, there's two separate copyrights at work when you register a recording, your performance of the song and the song itself. And so, I wouldn't worry about Fruity Loops coming after you.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Brad, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum. Let's go to Denise in Hopewell Junction. Denise.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm a classical singer and musician in Hopewell Junction, New York. And over the years, I've written four art songs. Those are settings of poetry by William Butler Yeats and Shakespeare. And I've performed them several times, and back in the 80s, I actually postmarked them, sent them to myself. I don't know how that used to be the folklore of how you could copyright.
It still is.
Yeah, it still is. Right up, it's the Yeti and the Loch Ness Monster of the copyright world.
Well, now that I have them up on my website, plus one I haven't sent through the mail, and I think it's time for me to get maybe some forms and send them to, where is it, the Library of Congress? How does this work?
Yes, you can do it online. You don't have to fill out the forms. You can just go to www.copyright.gov and follow the instructions, which are relatively clear. And
why is everybody laughing?
I don't know, any caveats for us before we try it online?
Well, no, actually, they've... If you really take the time to read the instructions and read their sample, it's
if I can
muddle through it, probably anyone can.
Breathe deeply and don't over-caffeinate.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah. I don't even think anyone has printout copies of the applications anymore.
Well, you can do it.
It costs more though.
But
now.
The fee is almost double, I believe.
Now, what is the fee if you wanted to copyright one of your songs?
35
bucks. Yeah.
What if you wanted 10 songs? You're going to pony up $350?
If they haven't been published prior, you can gang register them all for the one fee.
That means if you haven't made copies and distributed them to the general public. And it's an open question whether just posting them on the internet is publication or not.
Well, they'd have to show, I would think, that someone had actually downloaded them.
Or that they were downloadable.
Yeah.
Right.
That, yeah.
I mean, So
right now, what's up on the internet is not the musical score. It's simply recorded performances.
Well, that's what you would register. That's the easiest thing to register. It's anything that's perceptible that shows the song. So it could be the score, and it could be a recording of a performance of the score.
So if I do it online, though, do I have to send some kind of facsimile?
Oh, yeah.
And MP3.
What form would that be in?
MP3, or they'd probably take a WAV file, too. I mean, whatever the common, digital formats are. You know, or you could, register it and then send them a disc in the mail that refers to your online application. They'll take that as well.
But your application would be considered valid from the moment you submitted it.
The moment they receive it.
Yeah.
Which electronically would theoretically be
immediate.
Right.
Right.
Okay. As soon as I get off the phone, I will.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Denise. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Copyright Forum. How lucky am I? I'm in for Alan today, and let's go to Jeffrey in Athens. Jeffrey.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Are you there? Yes.
Hello.
I'm in possession of a group of about 100 old negative images from about 1915, and I've had them in my possession for about 40 years. I want to try to copyright them because I want to eventually publish them. Can I copyright them? I didn't take the pictures.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not unless, unless the photographer died less than 70 years ago. The photograph.
He did.
More than 70 years ago?
No, he died less than 70 years ago. He died in the 70s.
And you get his estate.
You'd have to be the designated.
And were these photos ever published before?
Not to my knowledge. They were. It was a portrait studio. Some may have been published in the local newspaper.
Okay.
I think you'd have a really hard time.
Yeah,
defending that you have the right to.
Yeah, I don't think. I think you could. You might be able to publish them. The estate may have some other ideas about that. But in terms of registering the copyrights. Probably not.
Okay.
I mean, if you colorized them or did something weird to them and changed them, you transformed them somehow. You could register what you did to them, but the basic photographs to start with, probably not.
All right.
All right.
Go ahead.
But if you did them in a book, you could register the whole book as the book itself, not the individual images.
Right.
So that would protect me from thievery and problems like that?
Yeah, I mean, people could probably take the photographs one by one, but they wouldn't be able to, copy the whole book.
Right. I posted them online, but they're very low resolution, and I'm hesitant to post them at high resolution just for this reason. I don't want people
exactly.
Them.
Then they become usable.
All right, Jeffrey, we got to take a break here. Thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. More on the Copyright Forum coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts, ashokancenter.org. New York Electric Motor Service, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in electrical and mechanical apparatus sales and service, a subsidiary of Applied Dynamics, newyorkelectricmotorservice.com. Field Goods, making weekly deliveries of local produce to educational institutions like the Susan O'Dell Taylor School for Children, fresh foods from small farms, field-goods.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preserveNYS.org, and Washington County Tourism, celebrating the arts throughout Washington County, including theater, classes, galleries, musicals, cabarets, opera, and artist discussions, WashingtonNYCounty.com.
One 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. It is the Copyright Forum. We go to Rommel in Rond Lake. You're on.
Oh, hello, Ray. How are you? Thank you very much for allowing me on.
You're welcome.
This one seems to me complicated, but I'm not smart about these things. I know you can put out some creations and ends up on Sirius or iPhone. if you're very lucky, but you never would collect. In this case, I'm thinking of a political campaign song, much as in the old days, Tippecanoe and Tyler II, right? Mm-hmm. And then approaching the local ward captain and getting a local folk song artist at some obscure folk place to sing it along. And, you know, then this particular, you know, contestant for a certain political job
okay.
would be, you know, in other words, this would be Elliot Spitzer should be comptroller of NYRA.
All right, fair
and enough. Then you use a Camptown races, you know.
Okay.
And
that's public
way.
Domain. Is that public domain?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. That's perfect. All right, let's go to Jim in North Pownell. Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
You're on.
Oh, good. I got a good one for you.
All right, great.
Back in the 70s, when I was a college student, I sat down and I penned out a little poem of an environmental nature. And I just wrote it down on a file card and stuck it in my desk drawer, and I was going through there the other day and found it. And I want to send it out to a couple of literary magazines, and I thought I should copyright it first before I send it out. And I'm just wondering, how do I do it?
Right after that woman that called earlier gets off the phone to the copyright. Now, copyright.gov.
Okay.
On the website and just follow the prompts.
And I would suggest that you go ahead and actually put a copyright notice on it. See with a circle around it, 2012 or 2013 in your name. And,
send
you know,
it out.
In the meantime, you can go ahead and send it out while you're applying for a registration.
And I was also going to say, I mean, you should be aware that you already owned the copyright
yeah.
to the poem just by putting it in fixed form, just by writing it down. And registering it gives you more rights. But, you know, I wouldn't wait to register if you've got something and you want to send it out. I mean, literary magazines aren't going to stay in business for very long by ripping off poets. And
I can't believe there'd be a lot of money to be made ripping off poets to begin with.
I'm not looking to make any money on it. I'm just
right.
looking to get it out there because you know, it's kind of a cool little thing that I did. You know,
but you do want to protect it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Super. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Jim.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. It's the Copyright Forum. 1-800-348-2551. And we go to Brian in Shelburne Falls. Hi, Brian. You're on.
Hi, Ray. Thank you very much, and thank you for your panel. I'm presently just started doing a workshop lecture, and it's about 2 hours long, and I have a writer who wants to turn that into a small book and expand on it. And so I'm wondering, once that turns into this small book, if I self-publish, what's the copyright process? And also, is there any trademarking or anything that you have to do on a workshop that I'm going to put into a DVD format for sale? I mean, the 2-hour lecture.
Well, I mean, if you got a zippy name for the whole workshop thing.
Yeah. And a logo.
You can trademark that.
I do.
And so, you know, you trademark the name of it with the Federal Patent and Trademark Office. And then you can register the copyrights to all your workshop materials, and whether it's I think you'll want an agreement with the guy that's going to put it in the
right.
form of a
yep.
book.
Yeah.
You know, he owns some percentage, or you pay him a flat fee, or you share a percentage of the ownership, or something. But you would definitely want to have something in writing with him before you proceeded with that.
Yes.
And then you just basically can copyright everything you generate, whether it's a book or a DVD or a lunchbox.
And do you come to someone like yourselves, or who do you go to do that? I mean, I'm really not that good at a computer. That's not my skill sets to do that kind of stuff. Where do you go to have that done?
You can go see someone like Paul. I'm sure Paul could help you, or right. someone similar.
I think any 13-year-old boy that with glasses. getting a trademark, you probably want to have an attorney.
Absolutely,
yeah,
because
that's a much more complicated.
It's also a more expensive, proposition.
And if you make a mistake, you're out. But
right.
copywriting is fairly basic if you're patient to do it yourself.
It's very straightforward procedure,
And that's off the internet.
Yeah.
Yes. www. Copyright.gov.
Even if you go to your local library, the librarian will be able to get you there and help you out with that.
Well, that's terrific. One last question on that. You're saying the trademark, and if I remember correctly, because it does have kind of a snappy title and that kind of thing, so that would be with the DVD. That's the one I would want to go to an attorney that does that kind of stuff?
Well, you'd probably have somewhere the snappy title and the snappy logo on the book, so that needs to be attended to.
Yeah, and your workshops, you know. I mean, you're talking about a whole bunch of different categories of goods and services here.
Yes.
You know, for something like this, you would do it for the public presentations, the educational presentations, the physical books, e-books.
Right. It might be better if, it sounds like, if he went to see a copyright attorney or IP attorney, intellectual property, to get somebody to sort of guide him through it.
The whole thing.
Given the scope of it, it might.
I think you're right.
Get a little complicated.
Brian, thanks. I cut him off. I'm sorry, Brian. I'm fast on the trigger. Okay. And how much is it? I know we've talked about this before. But if I was going by myself like a fool to trademark something,
the registration fee is $275 per category.
Right.
So if you're doing, you know, e-books, that's one category. Physical books is another category.
Audiobooks.
Audiobooks, a website.
You can drop $8,000 or $10,000 on trademark.
So, in other words, if I own something and I want to trademark it, I can't just pop that trademark on everything that I want?
Well, you can get a common law trademark, which gives you a little bit of protection. Yeah. You can apply for a state trademark, which gives you a little additional protection.
Which is cheap and fast
through the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna register that and get the full protection you can get, you know, I think it's like anything else. You've got to look at the value of what you're trying to protect, the value of the company, and if it's worth it, then you have to pony up.
Yeah.
And if you don't use your trademarked image or words, you can lose your trademark.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to get it out there and use it.
Right.
You can't just squat on it.
So theoretically, going to an attorney for the IP type of stuff might actually end up saving you money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even though you're paying the hourly. Which, you know, cha-ching. All right, let's go to the phones. Sean in Kingston. Sean, you're on.
Hey, how are you? Long-time listener, big-time appreciator.
Thank you.
Two quick questions. Can I copyright appreciator and other such
words? Very nice.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that a word?
Well.
And two, but more importantly, I'm a musician in the area. And say at like a, I do an Irish session, which is, you know, we're playing old-time music. And then we play some other a few more recent tunes, and then we may take a tune, you know, maybe from the 70s and do it in an Irish style. But most of, I would say 70% of the material is hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
We've been getting, I'm sure you're familiar with the company BMI.
Oh, yes.
I've heard of that a few times.
Yeah. And, I also play jazz music at a place, and they were giving us hassle. And is it true that, like, if you play like 70% of original material, and we also play original material as well, you know, a certain percentage of original material, they don't have the copyright for it, even if, like, jazz musicians are, you know, they play the head of the tune,
right,
meaning the melody, and then 5 minutes of improvisation or whatever, and then end with the head. I was just wondering if you can clarify that for me, because I just get the feeling that it's just a big bully thing.
It is. But BMI and ASCAP are organizations that collect royalties and pay royalties to songwriters for the public performances of their songs. So if most songs, you know, if you have a registration license from BMI, a blanket license from ASCAP, and a blanket license from a third organization called CSAC, you have probably got a license to perform every song that's written or close to it. But this can be pricey, particularly for restaurants and clubs that might have live music once a week. And BMI and ASCAP are getting increasingly aggressive at coming after and trying to shake down these people for, you know, a couple of thousand dollars worth of licenses a year. And if you don't get the license and continue to have live music, they will sue you. A number of clubs are maintaining that they are only playing original music or public domain music, original music by the artist, and they won't let the artist do any cover versions. And there's no 70% rule. It's pretty absolute. If you know you've got somebody in there that you've told BMI is doing you know all original music, and they slip in a I don't know Van Morrison tune or something, you know you've got an issue on your hands. You know it's very difficult and it's very treacherous. And you know I mean what ASCAP and BMI are doing is basically shutting down venues for musicians to play live in, and they're doing it every day. And they're doing it all the time, and it's really a shame.
Sean, do you play it at Elephant in Kingston?
Yeah.
Ah, I live upstairs. I've heard you. You're very good.
What do you think?
You're the guy.
No, they're very good.
He says, "What do you think?"
Very good. Very enjoyable.
All right.
Well. So basically, you're saying. Quit the covers. Don't play any Pogues, or because we were talking to them and they were like, we own lots of musicians, and it's like, well, like give us a list of who you know are they responsible to give us a list of who they own?
It's all online.
You can find it. The BMI has a site, and ASCAP has a site.
Yeah,
right. Search them.
Cool. Thank you.
Hey, good luck. Good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Joan in Pittsfield is on. Hi, Joan.
Hello. I was very excited to hear this topic today because I have a question. It's very relevant to my situation. I was recently contacted by a production company that has a hit show based in Alaska on the Discovery Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who contacted me had heard through a friend about some of my wild and crazy experiences I'd had in the wilderness of Alaska in the 1970s. And she wanted to hear more about my experiences with the possibility of creating a brief premise to submit to their head of development. So I've been in the process of creating a brief summary of the experience, and I was going to also send a few photos and some excerpts from a partially completed memoir. But I began to wonder, what do I need to do to protect, the story? And my understanding is, although I have a title I really like, that I can't protect the title.
No.
Correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. I probably would want to register the copyrights to everything you have. And then I think even more importantly is have the Discovery Channel execute a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Where they say, in return for you showing them these stories. Some sounds like it's a mix of fiction and nonfiction.
No, it's actually all nonfiction.
But but they could take maybe the contours. They could take bits and pieces, ideas out of that and probably get away scot-free and these companies do this all the time. But in order to take any of your ideas that they agree that they will negotiate a fair
usage fee
with you. And that's pretty standard in the industry, and they probably have their own non-disclosure agreement that they would give to you. And that's probably the best you can do.
It protects them, too, because that way, someone can't pop up later and say, well, that was my idea and blah, blah, blah.
Which we've also seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you said a non-disclosure agreement and a fair usage fee. Those are two separate things. Are they part of the same thing?
Well, what the non-disclosure agreement protects is when you're talking to them, when you're showing them the treatment that you're putting together. And then they can either pass on it or they can accept it. And then once they've accepted it, then you have to start negotiating, preferably with a lawyer helping you, someone like Paul, who knows how to talk to these folks. And he or some other lawyer could negotiate a fair usage fee for you.
Okay. That's
all right. But go ahead and register the copyright.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For the cost and the amount of protection you get, why not do that?
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Hey, Joan, thank you.
We ought to be getting a kickback from the copyright office. We're sending a lot of people to them.
I thought you were going to say from me.
Yeah, good
well,
luck
from
with that.
You yeah. too.
You can make more that way. 1-800-348-2551. Keith in Athens. Keith, you're on.
Hello. I want to make a short film based on a short story by an English author who died in 1916, and the story was not published until 3 years later in 1919. You may have answered my question already by saying that copyrights are only good for 70 years, but I didn't know if that was true of English authors as well as American.
You're good to go. I think it's even shorter for English.
Yeah, the Berne Convention.
Back then. And you're talking about a law back then. But I think you're good to go. I think it's all public domain.
Okay. And I had one other question, too. I'm also a visual artist, and I have already been working on a series of drawings and paintings of an actress whose heyday was in the 50s and early 60s, and I'm doing them based on photographs, and I'm wondering what the copyright is there, what the issue is there. The latest would be around 1961 or two.
And are you copying the photographs pretty closely, or are you using them as a reference?
I'm just using them as a reference. The finished work is very different from the photographs.
Then you're probably okay.
Yeah.
I think you're okay as long as you're not absolutely copying the photographs, because then you'd be theoretically infringing the copyright of the photographer. I don't know, Paul, about the right to publicity issue in places like California, if that would come into play.
Right. It depends. Chances are, if she died, when did she die?
1962.
Are we talking about Marilyn Monroe by any chance?
I might be, yeah.
well, then you're good to go. There was just a court case that ruled, since she died in as a resident of New York City, that there are no ongoing rights to her right of publicity after her death. So you're good. You're absolutely good to go.
It was a lawsuit. Yeah.
If it happens to be Marilyn Monroe.
Just if.
All right.
Or anyone else that died in New York as a resident.
Or any state other than California.
But what I'd love to do, actually, the photographers themselves are, as far as I know, all dead. But I would actually like to have an endorsement from the estate of the photographers. I don't want to, try to deceive anybody. I want to give credit where credit is due and acknowledge that I couldn't be doing what I am doing without the original photographs.
Dangerous.
Kicking a sleeping dog. I don't know.
Yeah, estates don't really care about credit so much as money. And you wouldn't be able, no one would be able to do an original drawing of Marilyn Monroe right now without a bunch of photographs.
That's a good point.
You just couldn't do it.
That's true. Well, they wouldn't look as good. Hey, Keith, we got to take a break here. Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. More on the Copyright Forum coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, and resume and cover letter writing. CareersinTransitionLLC.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Chester Wood, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. The summer home and studio of Daniel Chester French, sculptor of Abraham Lincoln for the Lincoln Memorial. Chesterwood.org. Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. For 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And the Red Line Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Offering accommodations for Berkshire travelers for over 200 years. 10 minutes from Tanglewood. RedLineInn.com.
One 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It is Vox Pop on WAMC. Bill Westwood is here. Paul Rapp and Polly Law. It's the Copyright Forum, and a couple from the social media. Julie on Facebook asks, or says, I'm not sure. I haven't really read this yet. I organize mountain hikes in an online group, providing attendees information that includes a map I've created by scanning a section of a map I've purchased from not-for-profit clubs and drawing the route on and adding other important information pertinent to my event. I realize this may not be germane, but I also add a link where attendees can purchase the entire map. I'm not receiving any money for doing this. Am I violating copyright laws? Panel.
Probably. But, It's like, I mean, maps were the main reason that copyright law was created in the first place in the, you know, in the United States in the 1790s, because they wanted to encourage people to go out and develop and make maps, because most of the country was unmapped. Now maps are kind of generic. Yeah, and the map that, you know, you may have infringed the some aspect of the copyright of this not-for-profit groups, but they probably stole it from somebody else. I mean, you know, right? I mean,
yeah.
So
I mean,
it's also unlikely
it
they're going to come
Valley,
after. Right?
Was it AAA? Was it, you know?
Yeah, and there's very little information on a map these days that you can actually protect.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's.
I think assuming she's not somehow making millions of dollars that attracts lots of attention and people who want a piece of the action, she's probably okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And then the next one is from our website. Ray on WAMC.org says, I'm in the advertising business. The question has come up from time to time. If an advertisement for a client we use, wait a minute, hold it. If in an advertisement for a client we use a photograph that includes a product such as an iPhone, perhaps an automobile, are we infringing on the copyrights of Apple or the car maker? Does it matter if the logo of the manufacturer is visible?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're infringing on their trademark.
Infringing on their trademark, and their argument is going to be that there's an implied endorsement of
right.
them, by them, of your product.
Especially so. If you show the product or the situation is a negative one.
Right.
Okay.
They will be very upset.
And especially yeah. in an advertising sense. I think in a film sense, it's starting to be a little less so. There was the movie with, who was it? Denzel Washington is a drunk
pilot.
Yeah. And he was drinking Budweiser all the time. And
right.
Budweiser, you know, said, please remove all of
it. Oh.
It wasn't
reverse
a product
placement.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, the movie was already out. The cat was out of the bag. And
yeah.
But in an advertising setting, it's really different because you're selling something.
All right. Let's go to Michael in Red Hook. Michael, you're on.
Yes. I, in 1979, realized that... no interior spaces had been landmarked, and I created a survey of significant interiors. I was did this through the professional design organization to which I belonged and still do. I created the a manual describing how to go about finding, surveying, listing the pertinent information about interiors to suggest them for consideration. And I went around the country to our chapters showing typical landmark, typical spaces that could be landmarked if they had such legislation in their communities or nationally.
Okay.
And created a manual. We did a lot of work on Radio City, which we like to think helped with keeping that from being demolished back
okay.
in those days. That's really kind of, I hesitate even to get into that one.
Well, is there a question?
Well, what I want to know is, do I have rights to the manual that I wrote, to the files describing all of these spaces that exist? They're in my possession. And right now, New York City is going to celebrate next year the 50th anniversary of the Landmarks Law. And there will be an opportunity to display and talk about this kind of thing.
Okay.
And a school wants to use this information and in some manner. Not, we don't really know quite how.
So
yet.
So your main question is, you've written this manual and you want to know if you are entitled to register it.
Yes.
Okay.
And you published it back already in 1979 or 1980?
Right. Published. It's a loose-leaf manual, and I guess published means...
you printed some up and
copies.
Distributed.
Yeah, you can...
Yes.
If it's after January 1st, 1978, you can register the copyright in your name still.
Okay.
And that will protect. You won't be able to protect probably the ideas and the methods and the whatnot, the factual stuff.
Yeah.
But the manual itself, you will be able to protect.
Okay. Michael, thanks so much for the call. Carol in Colebrook, you're on.
Hi. My name is Carol McMahon. I live in Colebrook. And my question has to deal with paintings. I'm a painter, and I want to know if I sell somebody a painting, and then they in turn have copies or prints made of the painting and sell them, are they infringing on my rights?
Okay. They sure are.
Good question. Lit up like a Christmas tree there.
Very good question.
But here's a caveat. You really should have a piece of paper that when you sell the painting, you're explaining that you're not selling reproduction rights to the painting. You're selling that physical painting.
And the right to display it.
And the right to display it as opposed to the right to reproduce it and distribute it by someone
else.
So
if I write, like on the back of the painting, I usually write all rights reserved. Is that enough or do I need to go and copyright them as you were talking?
Well, you have copyrighted it when you've created it, but you probably should register it with the Copyright Office. After you complete the painting, take a good photograph of it and use that as your what's called the deposit of the image.
Yeah, and the copyright exists separately from the physical item, which is the important thing.
Right.
So she bought the physical item, but if you had kept and I would recommend you keep high quality digital scans of all your original works before you sell them. You're free to sell prints, cards, T-shirts,
whatnot. Yeah, but she's not. Decades ago, Nelson Rockefeller had a collection of Remington bronzes, and he opened a little shop in Rockefeller Plaza selling copies that he had made of these Remington bronzes. And he got into a mess of hot water about that. And it's the same kind of thing. The purchaser of an artwork only owns the right to display the artwork. If the person who bought the painting wanted to, they could cut it up into little pieces. They could do anything they want to the physical piece itself.
Yeah.
Right.
But they cannot reproduce it.
Okay,
all right.
Great.
Carol,
all right,
thanks
thank
a lot. Yep, appreciate the call. We go over to Bill in south of Albany. Hi, Bill.
Hey, I published on the internet on a internet science journal site with the help of an editor some research I did. Then eventually the organization no longer exists and the website came down. And I would like the information to be out there to the general public. I have other websites that are willing to just post it on their website. What are my rights here?
What was your agreement with the original hosting website?
Unfortunately, I'm on the road, but it was basically they had the right to publish it, but the information was mine.
Okay. I mean,
I don't have any written thing in front of me right now.
And they're out of business right now.
Yeah, they shut down.
I would just resubmit it to whoever wants to reprint it, and if this defunct journal has a problem, they'll let you know, but you probably won't hear anything.
All right.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And, we have about 6 or 7 minutes to go. We'll get to some more calls in a minute. But in case we run out of time, let's do contact information now so that people can get in touch with you. Obviously, we will not get to all the calls here today. So, Polly, how would one get in touch with you?
PMlaw@buttonwoodart.com.
And Paul?
I'm at paul@paulrapp.com.
And Bill?
Westwood@capital.net.
And if we have time, we will say that again at the end of the program, but it's such a popular show, I don't know if we will have... we're going to try to squeeze as many calls in as we can. Malcolm in Sunderland, Mass., you're up.
Hello, good day to you folks.
Good day.
My question is a little bit complex, but I'll get hopefully to the meat of it. It has to do with... basically being a sampling artist, a remix artist, and wanting to stay, well within the rules and the law, but having respect to trying to do my art. So there's a few different formats that I like to use, and I'm wondering what the best way is to kind of, you folks were mentioning EMI and other folks, is there a way to kind of get, BMI, is there a way to get blanket permission to... use a bunch of songs within their group?
No. No, not in terms of sampling. And sampling, I would encourage you not to follow the rules because they're completely onerous. They're subject to change, and there's a very good chance that what you're doing is fair use of the original work. Fair use is a evolving concept. It's evolving much slower for music than it is for visual art. But if you were to go acquire licenses for the samples you used, you know, even if you're only using four or five samples in a recording, it would likely be cost prohibitive.
Okay. Well, in terms of not as much using it in recordings or avoiding, you know, those costs and or even getting those permissions, I've looked at a few different ideas. One is to do the remix, you know, do remixes where you use, you know, enough pieces of a song that you would owe for royalties, but you do them for charity.
That's not going to matter.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. BMI, well, meaning doesn't care about charity. Okay.
But meaning you take all the money and pay for the samples with them.
But still, if you're taking samples, if you're taking less than the whole song, most of these music publishers are going to say, you know, you have to acquire a license from them. They can say no, and then they can also charge you whatever they want.
Mm. Sure. And if you say do get permission though to use a whole to use a song, say you can kind of use pieces then if you want, or is that going to still be up to them?
That's going to still be up to them. If you do, if you do an intact cover version, you know, basically the entire song without drastically changing the song, you can get what's called a mechanical license. But if you start slicing songs together, you know, and cutting and pasting in order to create a new work, that's where you get into trouble. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Okay, yeah. So only for home use?
For home use, you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Home use, I can do whatever I want. Ooh. How about this fine little nuance here?
Let's move it along.
Educational use?
Maybe, but don't play too fast and loose with that. Live performance, you can do it. That's how Girl Talk gets away with it.
Live performance.
But recordings is and copies is where you start getting into trouble.
Malcolm, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Let's go to Julia in Del Mar. Julia.
Yes, hi. This is Julia.
Hello.
Hi, I have a quick question. I have a story that I came upon about 20 years ago that was written by Eleanor Roosevelt when she was 14 years old, and it's a children's story, and it was found by an archivist who gave me a copy of it down there, and I have that copy. It's in her handwriting, and I wanted to see about putting it in a children's book, and he said it was by public domain, and I couldn't do anything with it, so from there, I'm not quite sure what to do.
Uh-huh, this is a good one.
What year was
I've looked on the internet, and I have never seen anything that she's published at that young age.
Well, that's not the determining factor. The factor more would be, are you the holder of her literary estate? And I would assume the answer there is no.
Right.
And she died when?
1960, something like that.
Right. And this is, we think it's an unpublished story.
Yeah.
So,
I would get a hold of her library or something like
I think you'd need to contact her literary trustee or.
Yeah, whoever's in charge of her estate and ask them. And they may, if this is unpublished and you've got a real shot at getting this out there, they may, you know.
They may give permission.
Yeah.
Right. And I obviously, I wouldn't want to spend any money, not spend any, but I wouldn't want to make any money of it. So I'd like to be able to put it out there.
Why not?
For humanitarian purposes. Well, no, that's not my... but that's not her way.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting that you have this. I mean, that might be worth money but on itself, whether you print it or not.
The original, correct.
Yeah, the original.
Well, it's a copy of it. It's not the original.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I think you need to contact the literary estate.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thanks for your program.
It looks like we are going to run out of time before we get to any more calls here today. So let's run through once again the contact information. Bill Westwood, you go first.
Westwood at capital.net.
And capital with an A-L?
Capital with an A-L. Thank you, Polly.
Thank you, Polly. And, all right. For that fine question, you get to go next.
PMlaw@buttonwoodart.com.
And Paul?
paul@paulrapp.com.
Well, thanks to everybody on the panel, and thanks to everybody who called in. Sorry to Jennifer and Rob and Judy, who didn't make it in today. Support for WAMC comes from Glens Falls Hospital, serving six counties in the southern Adirondacks and 28 locations. Big City Medicine, Hometown Care, Twitter, Facebook, and glensfallshospital.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, empireexhibits.com. Joy L's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry and gifts, joyellsjewelers.com. And Amherst Nurseries, Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring locally grown trees and shrubs and providing full landscaping services to the Pioneer Valley and surrounding areas, amherstnurseries.com. Don't forget, the conversation continues at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can also throw us an email at voxpop@wamc.org. Thanks for joining us today. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Birds, Rich Guthrie, Say No More. See you then.